All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our three ideas in 30 minutes. I want to thank our three sponsors this evening very, very much. First of all, sponsored for Refuah Shleima as we continue to daven for Yehudis Kayla Bas Chana Malka, very much in our hearts and on our minds. Also sponsored by Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak. In gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS, we're grateful for their constant support. And to my mother, in commemoration of the 25th year site of my father, her husband, Dr. Mark Moskowitz Moshe Ben Avram, on his 25th year site, who's going to be on 13th of Elul. His neshama should have an aliyah. And as always, our learning should be an aliyah for the neshama of Esther Tila Bas Gabriel Pinchas. And we've already named our winner, Jack. Jack is the winner. And your father should feed you more. Okay, here we go. Idea number one is a very powerful idea. Very powerful idea. Now, some ideas that we share are more relatable to our everyday life, maybe help us become a better person. This one, I think we'll do that. But aside from that, it's just Tom. It's a very, very powerful idea, especially in the times that we are living in. So in that regard, it is extremely relatable and powerful. The Pasuk says, Ki tzeitzei l'milchama, that first it talks about going out to war, and then it says, Lo sira shor achicha, Oech sa nidachim lo suchali salim, the halachos of hashava savita. You have to return a lost object. Ibn Ezra already points out, what is the juxtaposition between these two ideas? What does going out to war have to do with hashava savita? Now, we've asked that question in the past. We've discussed this Ibn Ezra in the past, because the Ibn Ezra says, afilu atayotim milchama. Even when you're going out to war, you have to do hashava savita. Now, why would I think you wouldn't have to do Hashava Saveda, returning a lost object if I'm going out to war? Because why would I think that time would exclude me having to return a lost object? Okay. So we've answered in the past, based on some beautiful ideas, Rav Henoch Leibowitz, the Rosh Yeshiva Chafetz Chaim points out, I had to get that in because now that my son's outside of the Chafetz Chaim system, so I got to continue to give cover to Chafetz Chaim. So Rav Henoch points out that it tell us that even in a time of war, when you're so self-focused on preservation, in war, you're in survival mode. It's hard to think about other people. Comes along the Torah and says, even when you're in war and you're in survival mode and all you're concerned about is self-preservation, still, Hashava Saveda, still you have to think about someone else. In other words, you can't be so consumed by a sense of selfishness. So the concept of Hashava Saveda comes along and says that even when I might be so concerned with self-preservation, I have to think about other people and the needs of other people. But here, Rav Yehuda Shaviv does something amazing with it. And he points out that Hashava Saveda doesn't just refer to lost objects, but Hashava Saveda refers to lost souls, to lost human beings. Now, Chassidus Shesvarim talk about this often, in the context of people who are no longer religious, that Hashava Saveda tells us that just as I have an obligation to return a lost object, so too, I have an obligation to bring someone who's distanced themselves from a religious lifestyle, I have to bring them back to Yadus. He does something a little bit different, and I think it's unbelievable and it's so powerful. He writes, Ach Hamusar Barur. He says, the lesson here is very clear. Lahachnis belev meshiva aveda inyan avedas hachvedas anaras nigremes beatiyah shem lachama. We're talking about returning an object in the context of war. Avedas rechush. One, we're talking about material objects that are lost. In other words, you find someone's phone, you have to return it. You find someone's spear, you have to return it. That's what Hashava Saveda means. But then he says, ve'od yoser aveda shebenefesh. All the more so you have to return souls. Now, what does that mean, you have to return souls? So I think what that means, I think that has a very powerful application in our day and age, even in a way that I'm not sure he intended when he wrote it years ago. And that is as follows. We know that in the 3.5 years, coming up to almost 4 years, since October 7th, so there's been near constant war in Israel. And the tragedies and the losses have been real, and they've been severe. We've had programs about PTSD and stuff like that. It's important to point out that there are overt trauma, there's overt casualties and injuries that people have faced. And then there are also hidden injuries and casualties that people face. There's the PTSD that's not visible, but that people who go out to war carry with them all the time. because they're carrying with them the stories and the sights and the tragedies and the traumas of war. And so therefore, when he writes, Va'od yoser avedus shebenefesh, that returning the soul, I think this is what he's referring to. He says, on the one hand, you have to return any lost object that you see. Meidach gisa, on the other hand, inyan hashavas avedu yesh bo kedei lahavir lahatzdik inyan milchamas mitzvah kehatzala miyadzar. She kokula hashavas aveda. Hashavas aveda is not limited in the sense of I find someone's phone and I have to return it, or in the context of war where I find someone's spear and I have to return that as well. Hashavas aveda means that you have to return souls, that we have to do our part to return souls. Now, that, again, as we said, the Chassidish Sfarim refers to Kiruv, but here I think it's referring to the unseen consequences of war. And that is that there are people that are impacted by war. Soldiers that go out to war and they come back different people. Families that have been separated from husbands, sometimes for 200, 300 days in a year. There's an invisible aspect to that. If I tell you how many people I speak to who tell me that the rates of divorce in Israel now are at unseen levels. Why? Because you have all these people that have been out to war for 300 days. The husbands come back and they're traumatized by what they've seen and they're not the same person. And they've experienced things that are indescribable. They can no longer connect to family or spouses because they've experienced something so fundamentally different than anybody else who's experienced, it's impossible to put into words. And so how can a marriage, how can you have that level of connection that you had previously? People who come home shattered, a fragment of themselves. Just a few weeks ago, the tragedy in Israel of people, Chas v'Shalom, who take their lives because of the trauma and the tragedy based on what they saw in war. And so therefore now we understand perfectly the comment of the Ibn Ezra in the Pasuk. The Ibn Ezra's Kasha, what is the Smichos Parshios? What does Hashavas Aveda have to do with war? And so first we said, Afilu b'shas milchama, that even in a time of war, and we quote Rav Henoch who said that it shows us that even when you're so concerned with yourself and self-preservation, you also have to look out for another person. That's a very powerful idea in and of itself, by the way. Because it means that even when you have so many obligations, I have to take care of my family, and I have to take care of my needs, and I have to get to work. There's so many things that occupy our day. The juxtaposition here shows us that even when I'm focused on myself, I cannot afford to lose sight of another person. Then we said maybe Hashavas Aveda means that I have to return neshamas, that I have to return the souls of people that have distanced themselves from Judaism. But if that's the case, what's the connection to war? So here we have this beautiful comment from Rav Yehuda Shaviv, that the Smichos Parshios of Hashavas Aveda and war tell us that when you go out to war, what returns? Sometimes lost souls. Sometimes people that are unable to re-engage with community, with family, with friends, and even with themselves sometimes, to reconcile what they saw with how to readapt to everyday life. And so they're lost souls. And so therefore, Rav Yehuda Shaviv says, the juxtaposition of war in Hashavas Aveda tells us that we have to care about those people, that we have to make sure that they return and that we make them whole again. We know this very well in our community. We run a very powerful program each year. It's the highlight of the year for me personally, a program called Peace of Mind. We bring a unit of soldiers. Next year, perhaps, we're even going to bring two units of soldiers in two different styles of trips. But we bring a unit of soldiers here to America for a week of therapy. Many communities have done it. Our community this year, I don't know if you saw, was highlighted. There was a film crew that traveled with the unit this year. It was a documentary that was featured on Khan 11 in Israel. It's a very powerful, actually, they're just translating the whole thing into English now, which will be available and more palatable for our membership. But one of the things that makes it such a powerful week is that throughout the week, each guy has to go around and they share experiences. Okay, so each guy kind of gets his opportunity. But one of the things that I hear over and over again from the guys after they return, they said, you know what, I came and I thought I would become, you know, I didn't even think I needed it. But if I did, I thought maybe I'd, you know, be able to tell my story, understand my friends. Every single one goes back and they write me and they say that since I've gone back, I'm a better husband, I'm a better child, I'm a better friend. They didn't know how to connect. They didn't know how to tell their story. They didn't know how to relate to anybody around them. And so therefore, there were relationships that were broken. They were broken, and so the relationships were broken. Part of what Peace of Mind, part of what the therapy does, is it allows them to process their experiences so that they can go back and they can reconnect to people. They have a language and a vocabulary with which to tell their story and to tell their trauma and to tell the experiences of the people that they've lost. And all of that is part of putting them back together and making them whole again. That is the juxtaposition of Ki Teitzei Milchama, you go out to war, there are lost souls. Hashavas Aveda means we have to do our part to not overlook the hidden tragedy and the hidden traumas that exist throughout Israel at unparalleled levels, but to be sensitive to that and to do whatever part we can do to help alleviate that pain and suffering. We do it in our community through this beautiful program, Peace of Mind, but everyone in their own right should reach out, should not underestimate how much these brave soldiers are coming back with, and to be sensitive to that and to do our part to alleviate a little of that pain and suffering. That is idea number one. As I said, it's a very, very powerful idea. You have to digest it a little bit. That's one of those ideas that you need to like let it sink in a little bit, but I think it's a very, very powerful idea. Idea number two comes from Rabbi Alex Israel. We're staying in that area of Israel, in Alon Shvut for now, with Rabbi Alex Israel. Rabbi Alex Israel points out that oftentimes there's a theme to a parsha. Oftentimes, if you tell me what a parsha is about, I could tell you a theme to what the parsha is. Right? Parsha is Vayishlach. I could tell you what the parsha is generally about. There's a theme to the stories of the parsha. What about Parsha's Ki Teitzei? What's the theme? Has so many mitzvos. So he says, how do these little details link together? What is the master plan? And so first he quotes an opinion of Menachem Liebtag, who suggests that maybe there's a correlation between the mitzvos of our parsha and the Aseres HaDibros. And every mitzvah or parsha correlates back to one of the Aseres HaDibros, and he says that that's a beautiful idea, but it doesn't really all work out. So then he says, maybe we'll adopt the opinion of Rav David Zvi Hoffman. And Rav David Zvi Hoffman says, you have to understand this week's parsha in contrast to last week's parsha. Last week's parsha, Parsha Shoftim, was about national institutions. It was about judges and policemen and kings, court systems. That was last week. This week, he argues, is about the individual. If that's the case, he says, that's very beautiful, the contrast between last week's Parsha and this week's Parsha. But he says, we have no clear guide to the correct order of these mitzvos. Our Parsha has a lot of mitzvos. There's no seemingly rhyme and reason to that Parsha. So therefore, we're left with the question, what do you do? How do you make sense of all of the mitzvos in the Parsha and organize them in a way that it doesn't just feel like Hashem threw a bunch of mitzvos against the wall and said, oh, those mitzvos belong in Parshas Ki Teitzei. What is the connection? What is the correlation between them? And he suggests the following. If you go to page number 3, he quotes three Rashis in the Parsha, all of which sound very similar. Rashi number 1, Eishes Yifas Toar. Guy goes out to war, finds a beautiful woman, marries her, essentially, right? So what does Rashi say? That as a result of giving into the Yitzhara, he will end up hating her. She's going to be the snuah. She's going to be hated. We're going to come back to that later on. And if he hates her, what's it going to lead to? The next story, the Parsha of Ben Sorer Umoreh. So there's a chain. There's a continuity between the stories. A equals B equals C. He's going to go out to war. He's going to find Neshes Yifas Toar. As a result of that, he's going to hate her, and as a result of that, there's going to be Ben Soromor. That's Rashi number 1. Rashi number 2 says that when a man is sentenced to death, the order of Parshios here tells us that if parents have pity on him, he will end up in a world of crime and will perform acts which will have him sentenced to death. This is the Ben Soromor. Again, there is a chain reaction that if the parents don't take care of the child when they're supposed to, so the child's going to go out and do horrible things, and then instead, what's going to happen? We're going to have to sentence him to death. So again, you see, there's a chain reaction. Number 3 at the end of the Parsha, talking about building a new house. So first we have sending away the mother bird, Shiluach HaKan. Then if you do that, you're going to be Zocha to build a home. And if you build a home, you're going to need a roof. And if you have a roof, you're going to need to build a fence around the roof. And so what do we see? And then you're going to have fields and vineyards and nice clothes. And so again, you see, there's a chain of events. A is going to lead to B, which is going to lead to C, which is going to lead to D, that there's a consequences to everything that happens. So therefore, he writes here very beautifully. What is Rashi telling us? Three Rashis, independent Rashis. He states that the opening passage of our Parsha are organized in the form of a chain reaction. If you do one bad thing, that will lead to another, which will lead to another, which will lead to another. right? In contradistinction, if you do one good deed, each mitzvah is going to lead to another mitzvah. This is the way Rashi draws the strands of our parsha together. To his mind, the entire parsha are lists of consequences, processes which are linked together by cause and effect. The strange connections of unrelated mitzvahs are indeed deliberate. They are connected not by a common concept, a thematic grouping, but rather a series of links in a chain. And so if I do one thing, it's going to lead to another, which is going to lead to another. If I do a bad thing, it's going to lead to more bad things. If I do a good thing, it's going to lead to a good thing, another good thing. Now we know this because of the Mitzvah and Pirkei Avos. The Mitzvah and Pirkei Avos tells us, Mitzvah goreres mitzvah, and Avera goreres Avera, that if I do one mitzvah, it's going to lead to another mitzvah. If I do one Avera, it's going to lead to another Avera. And then the Mishnah ends off, Sheschar mitzvah mitzvah, uschar Avera Avera. That the reward for doing one mitzvah is another mitzvah, and the reward for doing an Avera is another Avera. Rav Alex Israel points out that those two parts of the Mishnah are actually detailing two different chain reactions. Mitzvah goreres mitzvah means that there's an organic, free-flowing process. I do one mitzvah, I'm more likely to do another mitzvah. I'm going to be in a position to be able to do another mitzvah. Schar mitzvah mitzvah means that it's not that there's an organic process taking place, but rather that Hashem is creating a reality. That if I do mitzvah A, so Hashem is going to make it that more mitzvos will be readily accessible to me. And if I do Avera A, so Hashem is going to make it that I'm going to succumb to future Averas. So whereas one is a natural organic response, you do one mitzvah, you're more likely to do another mitzvah. You almost build up that muscle memory. But the other one is that Hashem gives us that ability. And if you piece all that together, he writes the following on page number 4. He says, in conclusion, when you think about it, this whole philosophy is rather frightening. The extent to which our actions will have influence is unnerving. In other words, none of our actions exist in a vacuum. I don't do a mitzvah in a vacuum, and I don't do an avera in a vacuum. Everything that I do has a chain reaction. It exists in the context of future actions that I'm going to partake in. He quotes Rav Hirsch on Pirkei Avos, which says this most succinctly. He says, should you have an opportunity to perform a mitzvah, do not let it pass by. Perhaps the mitzvah seems so easy that you might think that there would be ample opportunity to do it at other times. Yet nothing should deter you from fulfilling it, for you cannot afford to overlook the consequences, both seen and unseen, of any mitzvah. So you might do a seemingly easy mitzvah, which you might think doesn't matter, has no consequences, is irrelevant, but little do you realize that it can start a chain of events which are going to lead to more and more mitzvahs. So there's no such thing as a small mitzvah, because every small mitzvah has the ability to start a chain of many bigger mitzvahs. You know, it's a maybe not a perfect analogy, and I'm thinking of it on the spot, so if it doesn't work, I don't know, can I edit it out of the recording? But I think it works. Seinfeld was once asked how he writes jokes. Like, you know, it's hard to write on demand. Nowadays, by the way, everyone's become a prolific writer. You ever notice that? Like, people who never wrote a day in their lives, all of a sudden are writing. Okay, AI has helped that a little bit, right? But before that, people actually had to think. So someone asked him, you know, Seinfeld, how do you write jokes on demand? Like, it's very hard to do. So he says it's very easy. He says, day number one, I sit myself at a desk, take out a big calendar, and I spend the first day writing jokes. And I take a big red marker and I put an X over the date. And then the next day I come back and I sit down and I force myself and I write another joke and I put another big X on that calendar date. And then I come back for the third day, same thing, force myself, I sit down, put a big X. The fourth day, he writes, I'm not in the mood to write a joke. I'm done. I'm burnt out. But I look at the calendar and I say to myself, you know what? I got 3 days going strong. I don't want to break that chain. And so I sit myself and I write down the fourth day. And then the fourth becomes the fifth and the fifth, all because of day number one where he put the X over that date. Mitzvos are no different. I think that analogy works, right? You guys will tell
no
me after.
No edit needed.
What?
No edit needed.
No edit needed? Okay, good. Good. Phew. Right? But I think that's how mitzvos work also. You do one mitzvah. It might be a silly mitzvah. Okay, it's one day. Who cares? So I learned an extra 5 minutes one day. I learned Tafiomi one day. What's in the grand scheme of my life, what does one day matter? No, because one day is going to build the momentum for day two. It's going to build the momentum for day three. It's going to build the momentum for day four. Averos work the same way. Averos are even more dangerous because the second I do an Avera once or twice, as Chazal tell us, nasis lo keheter, then it becomes permissible in my eyes, and I stop even viewing it as an avera, and now I'm off to the races with that avera. So there's consequences to everything that we do. And then Rabbi Alex Israel finishes off, obviously, this is a very powerful idea during Elul. Very powerful idea during Elul. He says, lest we come despondent, lest we feel that we are simply a product of our prior decisions, lest we feel that it is hopeless, that we will never change, the Rambam has something else to say, we choose. We can at any moment reset our path. But don't forget, our choices have consequences always. So if you've been meaning to start something, start small. You don't have to start big. Start with a little action and gain that momentum. Continuity and consistency is the key here. It's not about how big the thing you're going to do, but it's about doing it regularly and with consistency. So if you want to take on some new learning, take it on every day. It could be 2 minutes a day. It could be 30 seconds a day. But start doing it every single day, and you'll see over and over again that pattern is going to become easier and easier. With Seinfeld, think of that. Take out a map. 30 days from now, I mean, we're a little bit less than 30 days, from now until Rosh Hashanah, make a big red X over every day that you're succeeding, and you'll see it builds an enormous positive momentum. So idea number one, from Rav Yehuda Shaviv, let's not forget the lost souls of any war. Idea number two, by Alex Israel, that our actions have consequences, both good and for bad. Last idea comes from Rav Baruch HaMeshbuz, page number 5. As we said, there's a very strange, we've discussed this in the past as well, we shared a beautiful idea from Lubavitcher Rebbe a number of years ago, but there's a very strange discussion about two wives, right? Ki siyen el ish shtei nashim, that a person's going to have two wives, ha'chad ha'uva ve'chad snua, one is loved, one is hated, v'yaldu lo banim ha'uva ve'snua, he's going to have children from both of the wives, lo yucha livaker es ben ha'uval al pnei ben ha'snua, ha'bechor ki es ha'bechor ben ha'snua, yakir la'seis lo pishnaim. Even if you want to give double to the child of the wife that you loved, you can't jump over the firstborn, and so even if the firstborn is from the snua, from the wife that you hated, you have to give double portion to her. And at first glance, this is just a halacha about pishnaim. Everyone, by the way, should have a halachic will. If you do not, because if you do not, then you have problems. But a halachic will is able to subvert this. But aside from that, so we know that the firstborn child gets double. Okay, again, we shared a beautiful idea from Lubavitcher Rebbe, I think 2 years ago. Ayin Sham, you can look it up on YU Torah. But here the Meshbuz, Rav Baruch HaMeshbuz, writes something very beautiful. He says that, what's this loved wife and hated wife? It's very strange imagery in the Torah. Torah is like acknowledging that you have like a wife that you love, a wife that you hate. I don't know. Seems a little strong of an imagery. So he says, no, rather, Perish Shekai al Shtei Bechinos HaAvodas, that the loved and the hated represent two parts of our Avodas Hashem, two parts of how we relate to Hashem. Yeshu Oides Hashem Bet Torah Uvetfila Levad Vehu Bechinas Ava. There are some things that we do that are so easily connecting to Hashem. Davening, learning, halavai, right? It's the way you feel at Ne'ilah. You know that feeling that you have in Ne'ilah where you're like zoned in? Rabbi Goldberg has like pumped you up. His 35-minute speech has gotten you going. You have an amazing Ne'ilah. Shimi is singing. The room is bouncing. And there's like a PC that says like, Judaism's so easy now, right? Like if all year round, it could be as easy as it is at the culmination of Ne'ilah. Right? I'm sure everyone at some extent, I don't know, I have that feeling. Right? All year round, if it could only be as easy as Ne'ilah. Okay? So there are times, davening, learning, that's the ahuva. The times when Judaism feels like we're cruising, when it's all easy. Shezos avodahia ahuva. And we love doing that. A great Shabbos meal with zmiros and a good fleisch, you know, some cholin, whatever it is. Okay? That's ahuva. That's love. That's easy. But then he says that there's another aspect of Judaism. And that's an aspect of Judaism where it's much harder to connect to Hashem through. It's much harder to find Hashem through. And that's material and physical world, right? It's very, very hard in many circumstances that we are in to be able to find Hashem and to connect to Hashem and to raise ourselves, above the physical world to be able to connect to Hashem. That he describes as the snua. It's difficult. It's hard. It's both hard because it's hard to connect to Hashem in those ways. And B, there are just some days where it's hard. Some days you get out of bed and you're like, I'm not in the mood to do all this today. And it's really hard. So Ahava and Snua represents two aspects of our relationship with Hashem. Sometimes when it's easy and sometimes when it's really hard. But what's the message? What's the moral? The moral is you might have thought that the pishnayim, that the double portion goes to the child of the ahuva, of the beloved wife. Not the case, says the pasuk. The pasuk says that the double portion goes to the child of the snua. What is the message of that, he writes? Ki mesa bechor ben asnua yakir, la seis lo pishnayim, she'avodas hatzadik haze betzarchi agashmim, hu nechsha be'enei Hashem yisparach pishnayim ke'avodas ahuva. When you force yourself, and when you sacrifice to serve Hashem, even when it's hard and when it's difficult, Hashem, that matters so much more to Him than when you do things that are easy. When I serve Hashem when it's hard for me to get out of bed in that morning, but I force myself to shacharis. I'm sitting there at night, I haven't done the daf yet, I haven't learned yet, I haven't whatever, and I get out of my bed and I do it, it's hard. There are parts of Judaism that are hard, but if we serve Hashem there, it's so much more meaningful to Him. Think about an analogy. I'll go back to my bashing AI right now, right? Think about the analogy. So if I write, let's say I decide, you know what? I'm going to write a note to my spouse. She's been amazing to me. He's been amazing to me. Whoever's listening, gender, right? They've been amazing to me. I want to tell them how much I love them. So I go on AI. I say, you know, Mr. ChatGPT, maybe you've named your AI, right? Leslie, whatever you named your AI. Can you write a love note to my wife? Thank you for everything. AI spits it out. Oh, can you put it in my handwriting? AI puts in your handwriting. It's actually crazy. I'll tell you guys a crazy story after the recorder's off. But, right? I put it in the AI. I cut it out. I put it on my wife's pillow. I come home. She's so excited. So nice of you. I say, yeah. You know, AI wrote you a beautiful love note. It's not going to mean anything. I put in zero effort. Doesn't mean anything. On the other hand, if I get up early and I wash the dishes and I take out the garbage and I fold the laundry and I, all because though when she wakes up, the house is sparkling and all the errands are done and she, and I put it, and I'm like pouring sweat, right? Like by 7 o'clock in the morning. So that's gonna mean something to her, right? Was it more difficult? Of course it was more difficult. But because it was more difficult and I put sacrifice and effort into it, it means so much more to her. The relationship, he says, with Hashem is no different. There are things that we do that are very easy in Judaism. A geshmak Shabbos meal is very easy, right? Ni'ilah is very easy. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. Of course it matters, but it's ahuva, it's easy. There are parts of our avodas Hashem which are snua, which are really difficult, which we hate doing, which we have to put a lot of effort into. It's not easy for us to do, right? There are people that can't get out of bed in the morning, right? For them to get to shul, that's a massive deal. It's a big deal. Some people come in to learn at night when they're exhausted and they've gotten home from a long day of work and they've just after their kids and they finally get out of the house and they have the option between Netflix and coming to a shir. That's hard to do. It's really hard to do. You have that amazing piece of Lashon Hara. You want to look at something, whatever it is. There are things that are hard to do that aren't pleasant. If you do those, that's the pishnayim. That matters to Hashem doubly. Nechsha b'inei Hashem yisbarach pishnayim ke'avodas Hashem. When you do the things that are hard, when you put in sacrifice, it matters to Hashem that much more. So we should never overlook, should never underestimate that when you have to push yourself to do something, and you might wonder to yourself, who cares whether I do it, not do it? If you push yourself and you put in that effort and you put in that sacrifice, it matters so much more to Hashem. Whatever it is that you find difficult, as the Rav Tzadok writes in Sitkas HaTzadik, whatever it is that you find most difficult, that could be your pathway to a relationship with Hashem. Because if you've overcome that test, if you overcome that snua, so that matters so much more to Hashem. Tangentially, this comes back to something that I speak about a lot. It's one of the most powerful lines I ever heard when Rav Lef was here a number of years ago. I've written and spoken about this. So he was asked, what is one of the biggest disservices we do to our children? And he said something very powerful. He said, one of the biggest disservices we do to our children, educating them, is we tell them that Judaism is supposed to be fun. Right? Judaism is supposed to be fun. Geschmack to be a Yid. It's great to be a Jew. Right? Everything's about amazing, and Shabbos is amazing, and Kasher is amazing. It's not all amazing, right? You know, amazing would be, instead of cooking and cleaning for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, if I were sitting on a beach in Tahiti with someone fanning me, feeding me grapes. That would be really nice. Right? That would be really nice. That would be fun, right? Cooking and cleaning, it's not always fun. Cleaning for Pesach is not fun. So what does it mean we tell our children that Judaism is fun? It's not always fun. Instead of telling our children Judaism is fun, we should tell them it's worth it. There's a big difference between the two of them. Fun means it's always fun, and the second it's not fun, I'm out. Worth it means that it's not always going to be easy. And sometimes it's going to require great sacrifice. And sometimes it's going to be snua. Sometimes I'm going to hate it. I'm not going to enjoy it. But I do it because it's worth it. Because I think it matters and it gives meaning and purpose and fulfillment to my life. And so even though it might be snua, even might be getting out of bed in the morning is going to feel like a root canal. But still, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it because it's worth it. Because that connection with Hashem is what's going to give my life meaning and purpose. Because a connection to Torah is going to fill me up spiritually. Right? So it's not always ahuva. But even when it's snua, there's a pathway to even a deeper and more meaningful relationship with Hashem. And so we saw three ideas. Idea number one, Yehuda Shaviv, a very powerful thing to think about. The aftermath of the October 7th war and the impact that it's had on so many people in Israel, both visible, which we are privy to, but so many things that are invisible as well. Idea number two was from Rabbi Alex Israel, the chain reaction. The notion that our actions don't exist in a vacuum. Think about Seinfeld. Every time you do a mitzvah, you're creating a positive chain reaction that can create momentum to bigger and better things in your life. And again, a very powerful idea for Elul. Idea number three from Rebaruch HaMeshbuj about Ahava and Snua, that sometimes the most meaningful things are the things that are the hardest for us to do, but it's through the hard acts that we do that we find the greatest reward. With that, I wish everyone a good